This is The Gay Life on KSAN San Francisco. The Gay Life is your source for news and information about the lesbians and gay men of the San Francisco Bay Area. Good morning. I'm Randy Alfred. This morning on The Gay Life, we'll be bringing you the hearings of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors into anti-gay violence. The hearings were held on October 9th in the supervisors' chambers in San Francisco. And they went on for quite some time. And because we feel this is an important issue, and because when we go out and talk to people in the community, we hear that anti-gay violence is the single most pressing concern for more people than anything else, we're going to bring you the hearings in their entirety, which means we're not going to bring them all to you today. In addition to this edition of The Gay Life, you'll hear the rest of these hearings on November 8th and 9th and November 15th and 16th. On this edition of The Gay Life, we'll bring you the testimony of the representatives of various organizations that are attempting to deal with the problem of anti-gay violence, and you'll also hear from several of the victims. In future shows, that is, the two shows that we're doing in mid-November, you'll hear mainly the testimony from the victims of anti-gay violence. And you'll also hear at that time the testimony of several people who spoke early in the hearing, but who are candidates for office, Supervisor Harry Britt and Supervisor Carol Ruth Silver, who are both candidates for re-election, Kevin Wadsworth, also attempting to be elected to the Board of Supervisors, and Board of Education President Bill Maher, who is running for re-election to the school board, and Tom Amiano, running for a seat on the school board. We can't bring you their testimony now before the election, because then we'd have to offer equal time to all of the other candidates. And if we took the candidates for school board and the candidates for San Francisco supervisor and put them together, we're talking about well over 70 people. So you'll hear some of that testimony later in mid-November. Over 200 people attended the hearings, which lasted for about 3 hours. In addition to committee members, Supervisors Hutch, Lawson, and Walker, Supervisor Britt, Supervisor John Bardis, and Supervisor Carol Ruth Silver were also in attendance, and Supervisor John Molinari poked his head in at one point during the hearing. City officials who were present were Police Chief Con Murphy, District Attorney Arlo Smith, Gordon Armstrong and Peter Keene of the San Francisco Public Defender's Office, Dr. Tom Peters of the Health Department, and Joe Bodka, the Chief Juvenile Probation Officer for the City and County of San Francisco. The first speaker at the Board of Supervisors hearings on anti-gay violence was Dick Stingle, the chairman of the Community United Against Violence.
CUAV is a group of gay men and lesbians who perceive the problem of anti-personal violence on our city's streets as a problem that can be successfully handled and who are focusing on that. CUAV sponsors classes to train citizens in the use of MACE, a non-lethal self-defense technique. CUAV sponsors self-defense classes to enable citizens to extricate themselves from potentially violent situations without harm. CUAV supports the Butterfly Brigade and its program to dispense whistles as defense and community awareness devices. We have a regular informational column in the Bay Area Reporter, a local gay newspaper, to inform citizens of the dangers of violence and what can be done to prevent or avoid it. We have an outreach program to other segments of San Francisco's population, and that program serves to create dialogue and to dispel misinformation without and within our community. We also operate a hotline for reporting assaults at United One. We've been collecting assault reports since January of 1979. The information I'm about to provide to this committee is based on the data in those reports. All of the assault reports, I want to say before I start, were volunteered to CUAV by victims of and witnesses to anti-gay or lesbian violence. The reports indicate that most of the victims, 95%, are men. 5% are women. 99% of the reports are from individuals who are gay or lesbian identified. This is a chart of the number of reports of anti-gay or lesbian assaults received by CUAV from February 1980 through September 1980. One striking feature of the graph is that there is a clear break in the pattern at the end of April. Until that time, the trend of assaults was down, as indicated by this line. At the end of April, that trend was reversed and has been up since then. It should be noted that the CBS special, Gay Power, Gay Politics, was aired on April 26th. It's interesting to speculate on the coincidence. A comparison of the number of assaults reported to COAV for the periods 179 to 180 and 280 to last month shows that during the earlier period, last year, we received an average of 2 assault reports a week. From February until last month, the average was 8. That's a 4-fold increase in the frequency of anti-gay or lesbian violence in 1 year. Who are the assailants? 4 out of 5 are teenagers, ages 14 to 19. 19% were in their 20s, and less than 1% were under 12 or over 30. 98% of the assailants were male, 40% were black, 30% Latino, 30% Anglo. Since last year, Latino involvement has decreased by half. Anglo involvement has more than doubled. COAV believes that this increased Anglo involvement results from greater awareness in suburbia of us and of the Castro area, an area where the majority of the assaults occur. A higher frequency of East Bay and Peninsula license numbers reported to us substantiates this. In 2/3 of the reports, the assailants were loitering or walking in the immediate area. They come in groups of 2 to 6, and those groups assault 1 or 2 victims. The assailants generally make anti-gay, lesbian remarks prior to the assault. In 1/4 of the reports, the assailants were riding in a vehicle, and 8% occurred on buses and streetcars. In 80%, 4 out of 5 of the reports, the assailants outnumbered the victims, regardless of the respective group sizes. The motivation behind these reports: in 90% of the cases, the victims attribute the motivation of their assailants to homophobia. In 10% of the cases, the motivation is robbery or unknown causes. I want to deal with weapons at this time, as this is part of the concern of COAV and others in the community. 40% of the assaults involve deadly weapons. 10% involved such things as knives, ice picks, broken bottles, and razors. 20% involved the use of blunt instruments such as bats, 2x4s, sticks, bottles, rocks, and clubs. 7% involved such weapons as automobiles, ropes, chains, and 3% of the assaults reported to us involved the use of guns. The results of the assaults, the consequences to the victim, are that almost none of the victims escaped unscathed. More than 40% required medical treatment, ranging from stitches and splints to major surgery. 2 assaults reported to us resulted in the death of the victims. 1 murder near Buena Vista Park was of a 22-year-old man, a gay man, recently arrived from Fresno, killed by gunshot to the head. The second involved a man whose body was thrown out of a car on Highway 101 near San Mateo. He'd been beaten so severely that he literally had no face left. When do these assaults occur? Regardless of the specific area we look at, the picture is the same. Mondays are relatively safe. There's an upswing on Tuesdays. The assaults fall off a little on Wednesdays, and they climb thereafter through Thursdays and peak on Fridays and Saturdays. The critically dangerous hours are from 10 p.m. to midnight. During these 2 hours of the day, almost 30% of the assaults occur. The dangerous hours generally are from 7 p.m. to 3 a.m. Where do the assaults occur? Although anti-gay lesbian violence occurs throughout San Francisco, as indicated on the map, Each dot on that map is the location of a single event of the 280 we've documented so far. The heaviest concentration is found in an area bounded by DuBose, Diamond, 20th, and Dolores Streets. If you want to know where that is on the map, look for the red blotch. There's so many dots in that area that I didn't have room for them all. 40% of the assaults reported to us occur in our Golden Gay Ghetto, which is as well known to the perpetrators of this violence as it is to us. There are many things that victims and potential victims of anti-gay lesbian violence or other anti-personal violence can do if they encounter a violent situation. For example, of those victims who tried to summon help by blowing a whistle or shouting, half reported that the mere act of attempting to summon help caused their assailants to break off or flee. 80% of the cries or whistles for help were answered by neighbors, passersby, and others, with the result in 3 out of 4 cases that the assailants fled or were taken into custody. COA feels that this shows a greater awareness and an increased willingness to get involved on the part of community members, and we welcome that. COAV recommends certain steps that people can take to minimize the risk. The first one is don't walk or jog alone, especially in the early morning hours or the late evening hours. Be especially careful from 7 p.m. to 2 a.m. and on Fridays and Saturdays. Carry a whistle. It gets the attention of neighbors and passersby. Respond to the sound of a whistle if you hear one. Alert people who are around you that something is going on. Be wary when you're around groups of 2 to 6 teenaged males. A very important item, resist the assault. A Stanford University study showed that 60% of assailants will break off assault if they're resisted in any way, shouting, screaming, take a punch, blow a whistle. Indicate somehow to them that you're not going to stand there and be beaten up. Work with community groups in your area to develop dialogue with neighborhood residents and community self-help programs. Learn about youth groups in San Francisco and volunteer your services to assist in their activities. Give youth jobs, something to do. Violence is on the increase all over the city. COAV recommends working with others to look at the incidence of assaults against everyone. It isn't just a gay problem. It's a problem for women, it's a problem for the elderly, and it's a problem for young people. I want to make a general statement at this time. 123 reports were received from January of 1979 to January of 1980. 280 reports were received from then to last month. An average of 2 a week in 1979, an average of more than 1 a week, more than 8 a week in 1980. A fourfold increase in 1 year. 40% this year involved the use of deadly weapons versus 10% last year. 8 assaults this year involved the use of guns versus 1 last year. 40% of the victims required serious medical attention this year versus 10% last year. 2 men have been killed this year versus none last year. COAV's observation is that the gay and lesbian community is under siege. It is clear that a backlash to gay and lesbian rights progress is here and growing. This is evidenced by the growth of right-wing fundamentalist groups such as the Moral Majority, and by this year's incoming tide of far-right fundamentalist street missionaries who condemn us in our streets to their hell for whom it is we love. This city is viewed by such groups as the headquarters of Satan's empire on earth and the modern Sodom and Gomorrah. These groups plan to converge on our city again next year Bibles in hand, to rid it of what they call sin and abomination. Violence comes from fear. Our assailant's ignorance of human sexuality and of whom and what we are feeds that fear. The forces of the new religious right wing attempt to prevent, feed the ignorance and fear that underlie the violence that we're experiencing, and perpetuate the social climate that allows that violence to continue by attempting to prevent proper sex information and counseling. They decry sexual activity of all kinds. They deny the naturalness of sexuality and portray us as sinners, perverts, and God-haters. CUAV does not stand against religion. Many of us find comfort in our religious beliefs and feelings. We stand, however, in absolute opposition to the only right way to God fanatics who would and have in past years send us to prison or put us to death. They oil the gears and stoke the fires of the social context engine that spills our daily blood. CUAV has been told that the gay lifestyle, whatever that is, makes us more susceptible to violence. Is it true also then that for senior citizens confined to walkers or wheelchairs, that the senior citizen lifestyle makes violence against them excusable? Or that a woman walking alone invites rape and is participating in a woman lifestyle that makes her more susceptible to violence? CUAV has been told that violence is up throughout the city, and that is so. We've been told that the violence against gays and lesbians is only part of the general increase, and that we therefore should not be concerned with it. We note that anti-gay lesbian violence is different in two respects. The first is that the increases in frequency and severity of anti-gay assaults are dramatically greater than the increases seen in the general community. The second is that the violence against us comes to us simply because of whom we love. The motive is not robbery or other self-interest. It is our sexual orientation. CUAV leaves discussion of the deep causes of anti-gay violence to others. We concern ourselves with assisting our community to deal with that violence. We sponsor classes in the use of mace. We support people buying and using and responding to whistles. We sponsor self-defense classes to teach people to get themselves out of potentially violent situations. We educate and inform people of dangerous times, places, and situations. We document assaults and we analyze the information thereon. We counsel and support victims of violence through their processes. We patrol the Castro area to assist those who are threatened with violence. And we urge and support our city and county government through this committee to acknowledge that anti-gay violence exists and that it is a special problem, wanting a special solution. We urge and support you to act expeditiously, as it is CUAV's perception that the problem grows more serious every day. And each day that passes increases the cost in terms of the spilled blood of our sisters and brothers and increases the risk of a community-based violent reaction to the violence perpetrated on us. Thank you.
This is The Gay Life on KSAN San Francisco, your source for news and information about the lifestyles of the lesbian and gay communities of the San Francisco Bay Area. This morning, we're covering the hearings of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors on anti-gay violence, and you just heard the opening address by Dick Stingle, the chair of the Community United Against Violence. Next, you'll hear Dr. Stuart Fleming of the Emergency Department at Franklin Hospital in San Francisco.
Madam Chairman, thank you for the opportunity of addressing the committee. In 1979, the staff of the Emergency Department at Ralph K. Davies Medical Center became alarmed over the number of assaults that we were seeing in the emergency room, and began keeping statistics relative to this problem. Between November of 1979 and July of this year, 141 victims of assault of various kinds were seen. 10% of these represented bar fights, 20% were domestic quarrels, and 17% were street assaults of various types. 72% of these victims were gay people, 28% were heterosexuals. It's important to realize that we represent only one small emergency room, which basically receives the so-called walking wounded, as more serious injuries are transferred to San Francisco General Hospital to the trauma center. These attacks almost universally, the street attacks universally are unprovoked attacks by gangs of teenagers. They are vicious in scope, and the intent is to kill or maim. The robbery does not seem to be a motivating factor. Weapons include knives, guns, brass knuckles, tire irons, baseball bats, broken bottles, metal chains, and metal pipes. Injuries include severe lacerations requiring extensive plastic surgery, head injuries at times requiring neurosurgery, puncture wounds of the chest requiring insertion of chest tubes, removal of the spleen for traumatic rupture, multiple fractures of the extremities, jaws, ribs, and facial bones, severe eye injuries in two cases resulting in permanent loss of vision, as well as severe psychological trauma, the level of which would be difficult to measure. We feel, as an emergency room in the Castro area, seeing most of the patients injured in that vicinity, that a serious problem exists on the streets, that they are simply not safe for large segments of the population. It is common knowledge at Franklin Hospital that during the hours mentioned by Mr. Stengel, it would be extremely unwise to walk in any direction from that hospital after dark alone. Thank you very much.
The next speaker at the anti-gay violence hearing was Gary Parker, president of the Stonewall Gay Democratic Club.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I want to take this opportunity to thank the committee and the Board of Supervisors for holding this important hearing. And I want to salute Supervisor Britt for pressing this issue. I think this exemplifies the reason why we need a gay supervisor in San Francisco, that these issues are brought from the various communities. And I'm really glad that Harry has seen fit to press for this hearing this afternoon. Members of the committee, this afternoon's hearing is not a first in the United States on the subject of violence, or in particular violence focused on the lesbian and gay community. Throughout American history, physical violence has been witnessed by all gays and lesbians, beginning in the schoolyards of America and ending in some instances in death. As a case in point, witness Boston, like San Francisco, where gays and lesbians recently have been attacked again and again only because they are gay, and in some instances so brutally that death resulted. I raise the city of Boston because there the city administration of Mayor Kevin White has brought the powers of government behind efforts advanced by Boston's gays and lesbians to reduce the tension that exists as gays live side by side with other minority communities, experiencing the urban phenomena of the 1980s. Is Boston that much different than San Francisco? Is its mayor and city administration that much more enlightened to the root causes of homophobia and its impact in the street life of the community? From what hasn't occurred recently in San Francisco city government, one would answer in the affirmative. Mayor Dianne Feinstein must set the tone of her administration, and that tone must communicate to all staff in all departments of this city that violence will not be tolerated, regardless whether that violence is committed against elderly, women, Asians, Latinos, blacks, or gays. When that clarion call goes out from this administration, in this building, in this city, that all citizens of San Francisco have the right and should be encouraged to exercise that right to use, and at whatever time or day or night, the streets, the parks, and the buildings throughout this city for their enjoyment without fear of acts of violence being committed over and over again to their person, will gay and lesbian citizens and other citizens throughout this city
begin to realize that the fears that they have about violence are beginning to be reduced. Ignoring the problem of the root causes of homophobic violence, and further, the reasons for the explosion and perpetration of said violence affecting all of us, must stop here today. We are all responsible for what is happening in this city, and avoiding discussion of the solution or solutions will only aggravate and encourage this gnawing concern. This administration has been invited again and again to address concerns in public forums in the gay and lesbian community and throughout San Francisco. We've asked the mayor over and over again, and I want to make a point about commitment and maintaining your commitments as elected officials. The gay Democratic clubs and the gay Republican clubs in the city asked some things of this administration when they were running for mayor last year. And a commitment was made by Mayor Dianne Feinstein to go into the schools of this city, and in particular Mission High School, and talk about the issues of violence. To this day, this afternoon, it hasn't happened. And she ought to maintain her commitments. That's politics in this town. That's what you come to us to get endorsements, and that's what that's all about. Well, she ought to maintain those commitments that she made to us. The Stonewall Gay Democratic Club has extended a formal invitation to Police Chief Con Murphy to discuss police community relations as it affects all gays and lesbians. We again take this opportunity to extend an invitation to our police chief and his senior staff to discuss the matter of homophobic violence and what his administration and what his staff and his department intends to do about it throughout the community. Until the mayor's administration, reinforced by the Board of Supervisors, comes into the gay and lesbian neighborhoods and makes its real desires known on what it wants to do to stop homophobic violence, hearings at City Hall, frankly, are window dressing and do not and give little hope to gays and lesbians throughout this city that an era of tension and violence in San Francisco is drawing to a close.
Madam Chairperson, members of the committee, Supervisor Britt. My name is Connie O'Connor. I'm Vice President of the Alice B. Toklas Club. On behalf of our club, I want to express our shock and disgust with the recent bombing and continuous harassment of the Women's Building. Our club... Our club also wants to express its concern with the increasing violence against senior citizens, women, and gay people in this city. I personally can't recall a single week going by in the last 6 months when one of our club's officers hasn't been called regarding beatings and attacks on our members and their friends. We want to strongly urge this committee to take aggressive and positive action to make our city's streets safe again. Thank you very much.
This is The Gay Life on KSAN in San Francisco. You're hearing the supervisor's hearings on anti-gay violence, and you just heard Gary Parker, the president of the Stonewall Gay Democratic Club, and Connie O'Connor, vice president of the Alice B. Toklas Memorial Democratic Club. The next three speakers are Frank Fitch, charter commissioner and issues chair of the Toklas Club, Carol Migden, the executive director of the Operation Concerned Counseling Center in San Francisco, and Matt Coles, an attorney and a board member of the Golden Gate Business Association.
I'm not appearing here today as issues chair of the Alice B. Toklas Memorial Democratic Club because other speakers from Alice have spoken already. I wanted to share with the committee some experiences I have had as an employee of the San Francisco Pretrial Diversion Project and a specific kind of violence that I have seen with my own eyes and that I think you should be aware of, and perhaps we can look for solutions in this area as well. I and others of my co-workers have interviewed people who have been, in our opinion, victims of violence by the police department. the certain kinds of injuries that people suffer that look to be only able to be caused by implements that are issued to police officers in the course of their normal duties. If you have ever seen handcuff burns that are caused by handcuffs either being placed on too tightly and or being used as a device to move people around, there's no other thing that you can imagine that could cause that kind of wound. In every case, we have tried to encourage our clients to go to the Internal Affairs Bureau of the Police Department to make a report, to contact other agencies in the community, Supervisor Britt's office, Community United Against Violence, to make reports so that we can document the cases that we have seen with our own eyes. And we, for the most part, are unable to get people to do that. And the reason they claim they will not go into the police, the Hall of Justice, the police department, to make a complaint is that they're afraid that they will be subjecting themselves to additional violence, that those officers who they claim abused them will do it again as punishment for having complained. We try to assure them that we believe that won't happen because we've been assured that that won't happen, but we can't prove to them that that won't happen. We can't absolutely guarantee that it will not happen. I bring this to your attention because I think that there are problems for the citizenry that are real to them in terms of making complaints, which is the only way the police department says they can investigate these issues. They have a fear of making complaints to uniformed police officers in the Hall of Justice. So if there are additional ways that citizens who have that fear can make complaints, a place outside of the Hall of Justice to non-uniformed personnel, I think you would see an increase in the statistics available to you and an increase in the number of cases that you'd have available to check out. I've drawn no conclusion from my experiences at pretrial diversion and seeing clients that appear to be the victim of this kind of abuse as to how many police officers might be involved. But I would say even if it is only one, it is too many. Thank you very much.
My name is Carol Migden. I'm the executive director of Operation Concern, which is a psychiatric clinic here in San Francisco serving lesbians, gay men, and their families. We're under contract with the County of San Francisco for $135,000 to serve this target population annually. Last year, we served more than 600 unduplicated clients. Of those, more than 20% reported incidences of physical abuse directly with their presenting problems. But what's more alarming is that universally 100% of our clients reported incidences of psychological and physical abuse. There has been an alarming increase in the numbers of individuals expressing suicidal ideation and more acute serious problems over this past year. It's staggering. Significant numbers of clients report increasing feelings of isolation, helplessness, hopelessness, and they feel totally without options and totally unsafe in these city streets. What's significant here is not the numbers, the isolated numbers of arbitrary incidences of violence, but rather the effects that this kind of violence has on the day-to-day lives that people live. It's the perpetual threat that violence might happen more than the incidences of violence that does occur. It is a gravely psychological toll that the individual gay is made to bear, knowing that he or she is a pariah within the city that they live. Maybe only 1 out of 50 women will be raped if they walk down a given street. But what's significant is that thousands of women won't leave their houses knowing that they could be assaulted. And this is what we deal with on a universal concept, and I'm not just talking about the clients that seek mental health services, but that every gay and lesbian that lives in the city experiences. If you want to see a stark, clear, vicious indication of this highly calculated violence, let's take this hearing to the women's building, because that's where it belongs. Every woman in this city is terrified. Every woman in this city is terrified, and particularly lesbians who realize that they're not going to be safe socializing in their own establishments. I mean, will Amelia's be hit next on a crowded Saturday night? How are we supposed to live our lives? I think what's significant, what the people of San Francisco have to realize, is that it is not important whether you like or dislike gays, whether you approve or disapprove of our sexual orientation. The fact is we're here, and we're here to stay. Largely, we are productive, positive, decent people who want to live a decent life in the city. And we want your help so that we can lead a life of dignity, so we can get back to living peacefully and productively in the city that we have chosen for our home. I thank you.
Supervisor, members of the committee, I just want to take a moment to give some impressionistic support to the very impressive presentation I think Community United Against Violence made. I'm an attorney in private practice down on Castro Street, Castro between 18th and 19th. I've talked to a lot of the people who have been victims of street violence. I talk to a lot of the people who, like me, live and work in that neighborhood. And my perceptions over the last 2.5 years, and I think they're shared by most people in that neighborhood, are, as CUAV I think has demonstrated, that the violence has been increasing in frequency and that it's been increasing tremendously in the nature of the violence and its seriousness. And I think my perception is that there's very little that the city seems to be able to do about that, and I think that's a general perception these days. And something else I see a great deal of is that is people form those two perceptions, that we're dealing with a rampant increase and that there's very little the city can do about it, is people turn increasingly to thoughts about doing something about it themselves. Not simply the kind of self-defense that CUAV was talking about, but something more organized. I find myself that there's very little that I could do to discourage that kind of talk, even if I wanted to these days. I find these days that I not only have to tell people that there ain't no justice, which is certainly not news, but that when people tell me there ain't no safety in that neighborhood anymore, I can't deny it. We've talked a lot about this problem over the last couple of years, and every time we've talked about it, the mayor and the city officials have told us that they're concerned and they're doing everything they can. And I believe that. But I believe that that's a pretty frightening reinforcement to people who perceive that there's nothing but self-help left. Because if this is increasing as drastically and frighteningly as CUAV tells us it is, and if the city is really doing everything that it can, then there's very little to say to those people but that they're fairly right. I think that neighborhood, as I watch it day in and day out, is turning into a powder keg. I think the pressures on people are getting more and more serious. I think the people in the city have no perception of just how frightened people are over in that neighborhood. And I think if something isn't done, I think it's going to blow. And I think it's going to blow a lot sooner than people think. Thank you.
This is The Gay Life on KSAN, and you're listening to hearings of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors on anti-gay violence. You just heard Frank Fitch, the issues chair of the Alice B. Toklas Memorial Democratic Club, Carol Migdon of the Operation Concerned Counseling Service in San Francisco, and Matt Coles, an attorney and a board member of the Golden Gate Business Association. The next speakers you'll hear are Bob Mahazing, president of the Haight-Ashbury Improvement Association, Bill Henry and Stan Kriolis of the Human Rights Foundation, and Les Morgan of the Gay Outreach Program Police Recruitment Drive.
Madam Chairman, Supervisors, I'd like to thank you for this opportunity to get to speak to you about what is going on in the Haight in terms of violence against gay people and against women. It just so happens, I didn't realize that this hearing was happening today, but last night, over 100 people attend that meeting who are very concerned about our neighborhood. There are 3 points I'd like to make about that meeting. Number one is that the Haight-Ashbury is not safe for women and gay people. This is a fact that all of us heard and expressed last night. It is not safe on our streets in that neighborhood. We have an unusual neighborhood in some senses because we have the park nearby, and the park offers many opportunities for people to be mugged and attacked, more so than in many other neighborhoods where there is a lot more attention going on. The second point I'd like to make is we found out a curious fact about the Haight-Ashbury. We had a report from a women's group first in that meeting, and one of the things that they pointed out is that the safest street in the Haight-Ashbury for women is on Haight Street itself, because there are plenty of lights and there are plenty of people around. They also pointed out that the most dangerous street, pointed out by CUAV, the most dangerous street in the Haight for gay people is Haight Street. What this means is that when violent act is going on, if it's directed towards a woman, more often than not, somebody in the Haight-Ashbury is going to respond to it if it's directed towards a woman. If violent act is going on in the Haight-Ashbury and it's men involved, more often than not, no one is going to respond. I say that again, no one. Part of this is obvious. I am a heterosexual man. I was brought up to take care of women, to sort of, you know, they are some sort of lower beings to me or something. And so it's quite natural that all of a sudden, you know, when you see a woman being threatened, you know, you respond, you just do. However, the same teaching says that men can take care of themselves, that men don't need the help of other men and other women in this neighbor, in this community, to help them out when they are being attacked. Well, I'm here to say that that's wrong. I'm here to say that anybody believes that anybody under attack doesn't need your help is wrong. Everybody, and I'm here to call on everybody in this community to help in every way to respond to violence in this community. I don't care if it's directed against a man, woman, or child. The Haight is extremely concerned. We happen to have one of the few incidences where a gay man was shot to death in our neighborhood. This is not acceptable, absolutely not acceptable. I'm glad that this hearing is happening. I hope something positive will happen out of this. I hope the whole city will realize that everybody is in danger here and everybody needs everyone else's help. Thank you very much.
I'm here today to represent two groups, the Human Rights Foundation and Victims of Assaults. And I'm representing them personally as a victim of an assault. It happened last February. And I was assaulted on my front doorstep at 5:30 in the afternoon in the Western Addition, so I don't fit all the statistics there. I would like to say thank you to Chairperson Hutch, because you called me back personally the next day after I reported it to you and Supervisor Britt's office. You also informed me to report it to the police, of which I was very fearful because I really didn't think they would do anything. I took your advice, reported it to the police, and two officers came out, and rather than just taking down my report, decided to lecture me on why I didn't report sooner, and also that it was inappropriate to report to you, because you, in fact, could do nothing. But this committee is doing something, whereas I don't think the police department has done a whole hell of a lot.
Thank you.
Now, with regards to the other organization that I represent, which is the Human Rights Foundation, we have a program which we call the Demystification of Homosexuality Project. We are going to Bay Area high schools and junior colleges. We send out a team of one lesbian and one gay man to sex education classrooms to dispel the myths and stereotypes that society has about lesbians and gay men. We have found, since the program has been in existence since 1978, that through evaluation forms, we have found that we have not changed attitudes, but we have in fact raised the consciousness of some of the people that have been in attendance in those classrooms. And also, I'm a representative of the Advisory Committee to Health and Family Life Education for the San Francisco Unified School District. A similar program has been underway since January of this year, and we have gone to all 11 high schools with speakers. And I think that preventative measures such as that are our big answer. That's all I have to say. Right.
Thank you for allowing me to come in and voice my opinions and my concern. I am part of that team. I'm project coordinator of the Human Rights Foundation, and I'm coordinating that project that Bill just spoke of, and he covered it very well. What I would like to reiterate that has been a concern of mine and an issue of mine is that the subtle, sometimes subtle and not so subtle racism that is put upon the Latino community, especially the Latino youth. I've been to Mission High School and spoken there, but I was more frightened when I went to Galileo High School and McAteer High School and found that the sentiment and anti-gay attitudes were just as relevant there as Mission. And I want to reiterate that it's a city-wide problem and concern of the city, and that we need to get away and dispel that myth that it just is people that are doing these attacks. We also, like Bill said, go out to outlining Bay Areas and speak, and the anti-gay attitude is very present there also. It's very frightening. I remember the very first time I got a card by my very first time speaking. We passed out cards for questions and answers, and the first one that I read off was "Kill all gays," And that was real frightening to me. So like you said before, this is a small project and a step, I think, in the right direction. I'd like to see it be a prototype for other groups and other organizations around the country. Thank you.
The problem of violence against lesbians and gay men in particular, have been addressed here today, is a very multifaceted one. And one aspect of it is the police department. Some of the aspects, such as the root causes, have been very intelligently addressed by Tom Amiano and some of the other speakers. But once the violence exists, you have to control it. You have to do something about it. And that's where the police department comes in. Now, my role has been as the coordinator of the Gay Outreach Program, which is a volunteer community group. It's not publicly funded. It's a private volunteer operation. And we've been doing recruitment of lesbians and gay men for the police department for the last 2 years. And I'd like to talk, therefore, about the role that that may have in the long run. It seems to me that there are two problems with the way police departments generally, and not just the San Francisco Police Department specifically, handles gay people. One of those kinds of problems is active. For example, the kind of police violence that has been addressed by Frank Fitch earlier in the day, name-calling by police officers being, in effect, abusive to gay victims when they're being processed. And there is a substantial amount of that in San Francisco, in my opinion. Another kind of problem is passivity, a failure of the police department to provide effective and vigorous law enforcement to gay complainants. Lack of follow-through with complaints, lack of engaging in hot pursuit in situations where it is possible that pursuit might result in apprehension of the aggressors. Now, these problems, I'd like to point out, are not unique to gay people. They're problems that third world people have been experiencing for many years, and it's only recently that the gay community has begun getting excited about it because it's been happening to them. Another problem is women's issues. Violence against women has never really been meaningfully addressed by police departments until women police officers began existing in substantial numbers. And as with these other types of groups, I think that the gay community has had a failure of service in both an active way and a passive way. Now, the long-run solution for this is that the police department must be representative of the community that it serves. And in San Francisco, with a substantial number of lesbians and gay men, we should have a substantial number of lesbian and gay police officers. And I'm pleased to say that Chief Murphy, who is here today, has followed the positive stance of his predecessor, Chief Gain, in being cooperative with the efforts of the Gay Outreach Program to do police recruitment. And I have no complaint about the SFPD administration's position. And at present, roughly 1 out of every 7 of the new police officers who are being hired in San Francisco are lesbians and gay men. By the end of 1980, over 40 of those officers will have been hired and will be in the process of completing their probationary first year. Now, of those officers, approximately 2/3 of them, I would say, are out to their coworkers. Not all are, but the majority certainly are. Now, that has had a remarkable change already in the way that the police academy operates. We notice a substantial difference now in police academies that are going through presently, as opposed to police academies during the early stages of the recruitment operation. The frequency of anti-gay remarks, of inappropriate content in academy classes, and so forth, has changed substantially as a result of having lesbian and gay officers in those classes. Now, in the long run, I think that good intentions are one thing, but knowledge of a community and ability to deliver good police services are something else. I'd like to make a suggestion to Chief Murphy, which is that one option might be to consider using some of these gay police officers for decoy work. There have been decoy operations in San Francisco and the Tenderloin and other parts of the city which have worked extremely well. And it would be possible to set up immediately, regardless of the sexuality of the officers involved, decoy operations in key violence-prone areas, which would use police officers who were dressed in an appropriate manner, and then handle that as a handle that as a straightforward decoy operation. And that's something where you wouldn't have to have gay officers being the decoys, but it certainly wouldn't hurt. And another effect is that many of the off-duty officers, of course, live and socialize in the areas where violence is at a maximum. And there have already been some instances where off-duty gay male officers have been in connection with altercations which have occurred. And because those officers were there in their own community, they were able to engage in the kind of community policing that in the past has gone on mostly in the Taravao district. So finally, the availability of gay police officers and lesbian police officers, I think, is a one step toward trying to solve at least, if not the root causes of the violence, cleaning up the aftermath. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This is The Gay Life on KSAN in San Francisco, your source for news and information about the lesbian and gay communities of the Bay Area. And this morning we're covering the hearings into anti-gay violence, which the San Francisco Board of Supervisors held on October 9th. The last three speakers you heard were Bob Mahazing, the president of the Haight-Ashbury Improvement Association, Bill Henry and Stan Kriolis of the Human Rights Foundation, and Les Morgan of the Gay Outreach Program, which is a police recruitment program. That was the list of representatives of organizations, and there were also victims who spoke. Now, you also heard some of the people who represented organizations were themselves victims, but there followed at the hearing a long train of victims of anti-gay violence and anti-gay abuse on the streets of San Francisco. The first three were Bill Devery, Gregory Williams, and Roberto Serrano.
Thank you very much. One Friday night in July, me and a friend of mine, who was deaf, were walking down Mission Street about 1 o'clock in the morning trying to hail a cab. Not much conversation going on, but I could hear that there were people starting to come near us. And the conversation that I heard wasn't too pleasant. I tried to convince my friend that to run. Couldn't do it fast enough. Seven people came up from behind us, eight from another direction. Before we knew it, we had 15 Latinos all over us, four of them on me and 11 of them on him. We waited. We finally got away from them with bottles being thrown at us. We had nunchucks and nightsticks used on us. My friend had gotten a cut over his head, a huge chunk of meat taken out of his lip, the lower lip inside of his mouth torn away. When we finally got away, we got into a bar called the Phone Booth, called the police. We waited 2.5 hours. They never showed up. This was a Friday night. I was not able to make a report until I could get them to come to my own home Sunday morning. That's an awfully long time to answer. When I finally talked to one of the people at Mission Street Station, I guess that's what it's called, he said, he wouldn't give me his name, that the lieutenant in charge of the night shift said that he did not want anyone on his squad going on Mission Street itself, that there was just too much hassle. How can we as gays be expected to walk any streets we want when the cops refuse to even drive down them in their cars, which are supposedly bulletproof and all this? While we were being mugged, people that were driving cars stopped in the middle of the street, got out, were watching, and were laughing. There was not one policeman in sight anywhere. I think this has got to cease, because this city has always been heralded as being one of the most friendliest cities in this country, and I have not seen that at all. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, in the past 3.5 months, I've been involved twice. One was Thursday night before Gay Freedom Weekend. Right around the corner from my house, three black guys with metal whips. It was quite vicious, awful. At any rate, when the police finally arrived, their response to me was, "Watch your attitude. We have better things to do." The second time was only a week ago tomorrow out at Land's End. And there were six gay guys going up the hill, and we were encountered by five Latino teenagers and with long sticks. 98% of all of their verbal accusations towards us was that, "You faggots, God loves us. He wants you all dead. So he really likes us because we're out to get you." It's really sick. I hope it stops. Thanks.
My story is that during the Memorial Day weekend, a group of three friends and me went up to the Russian River. And what we did was simply go up there to spend the day, rented a canoe, and we're having a great time. I go up there often. And a group of about 50 to 80 men on the beach all of a sudden started yelling, "Look, they're faggots." And before we knew it, rocks about this big were being thrown at us, and we barely got away. And something that the representative from Operation Concern pointed out is very real for me, and that is the psychological effect afterwards. For days and days, I would just walk around and tears would come to my eyes. It was a very moving thing and very frightening. I've lived in San Francisco now for 5 years, and I do not own a car. I do not go out at night because I don't feel safe taking the Muni buses. And I won't, it's just real sad, and I don't want to see this happen anymore. The police up there responded by clearing the beach, and I reported the incident to Harry Britt's office and to the police department up there, and I don't know what happened after that. But I don't feel safe walking the streets in the city, and I feel it more and more every single day. All I have to do is walk down the street, and I feel conspicuous just by the fact that I'm gay and there is this increase in violence, and I hope that some results will come out of this and that I will feel safe in walking the streets. Thank you.
And that about wraps it up on The Gay Life this morning. You've heard portions of the hearings of the San Francisco Board of Supervisors into the problem of anti-gay violence on the streets of San Francisco, and we'll continue our coverage of those hearings on November 8th and 9th, and November 15th and 16th. Next week on The Gay Life, you'll hear me interview lesbian and gay supporters of the Carter-Mondale ticket, the Reagan-Bush ticket, the Anderson-Lucy ticket, the Commoner-Harris ticket, and the Clark-Koch ticket. I'm Randy Alford, and I produce The Gay Life. I also write a column, On Live, for The Sentinel, which is available in gay neighborhoods throughout San Francisco. The Gay Life would like to hear from you, so write us if you have any comments, criticisms, or suggestions. Our address is The Gay Life, KSAN, 345 Sansom Street, San Francisco, California, 94104. Once more, that's The Gay Life, KSAN, 345 Sansom Street, San Francisco, 94104. If you're listening on Saturday morning, this show will be repeated Sunday night at midnight, so tell a friend to start the week with The Gay Life on KSAN.